The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Even before its release in May 1994, The Mysterious Doom Satanas was a mythical album. Created amongst blood, fire and death, Mayhem's debut album changed extreme music forever, and 30 years later is still considered one of the pinnacles of black metal. In this series of podcasts, different artists comment on the importance that the album had in their lives and careers. My name is Matias Gallardo, and this is The Mysterious Doom Satanas 30 Years. Dagur and Thomas are Icelandic guitarists. Both play in Mistermin, the band that has led the renovation of black metal in their country during the last decade. Raised in a land of frozen landscape and breathtaking natural beauty, they found in black metal a vehicle to express their inner darkness. With three albums released, Mithrimin established themselves as one of the most respected young acts of the international scene, and the overwhelming force of their shows is matched only by the volcanic power that beats beneath the soil of their homeland. They also play together in bands such as Null and Nadra, and run the specialized cassette label Vanagander. I wanted to start asking you a bit about how you guys were brought up musically.
Musically, I'm mostly self-taught. I've always been really fascinated with music. I first started getting into rock and roll and heavy music at a pretty early age. Can't really pinpoint when. I remember getting Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin records from my father as a child, and I started playing guitar maybe around age 13, and didn't really start to, you know, focus on playing and getting better until maybe 1 or 2 years later. Since then, I mostly just tried playing by ear and looking up tablatures of Iron Maiden and Metallica songs and the likes when I could.
Still today.
Yeah.
Okay. And Dagur, in your case, it was kind of the same, right?
Yeah. I knew there was like a couple of metalheads in my life. A friend of my mom's introduced me to Rammstein when I was 8. And my brother was a lot into stuff like Metallica and just like basic stuff. He introduced me to Metallica, and like as you grow into being a teenager, you start to get to know metalheads at school. And there was like a couple of guys in my grade school that were listening to stuff like Slipknot and whatnot. So that's like the early years.
Okay, so how did you get specifically into black metal?
When I was maybe 13 or 14 years old, I was listening to a lot of grindcore, Nasum and Agoraphobic Nosebleeds, Napalm Death, that type of stuff. So I was always looking for more and more extreme music. And it was kind of by chance that I got into Dark Throne's Under a Funeral Moon. I got a CD copy of that one for my 14th or 15th birthday, and it really captivated me. It was unlike, you know, it didn't place emphasis on just being heavy. It had this dreamlike, almost ambient quality to it, which stuck with me ever since. It was also in the middle of winter, which is the perfect time to experience that type of music. So like that would have been my first proper introduction to black metal, I suppose, and it all snowballed from there. There's a little record store in the downtown called Valtis CD Store. And he was always looking out for the young teenagers in the scene. So if I would ask him for recommendations or if I wanted a specific album, he would usually be able to order it abroad for me.
Okay. And in your case, Dagur?
There was this guy that I knew mostly because both of us were like huge Metallica fans. I don't know how old I was, maybe 15, 16. And he was discovering black metal. I don't know how, but he showed me stuff like Behemoth. this was around the time they had the Demigod released, so like they were getting some serious recognition. Yeah, I was fascinated with a lot about the music. Like, it took me some time to get used to the vocals. I thought they were they were really new to me. I just started looking at Wikipedia articles, and I was really fascinated about the history behind Mayhem and Burzum. So I was already like very interested in Mayhem even before I heard the music. And then, just like Thomas said, like, it's a snowball after that. You're looking at metal archives, checking out, like looking at all the information you can find there, trying to find similar artists and sort of figuring out your taste. And it's like opening a Pandora's box. Everybody who listens to this kind of music knows what I'm talking about, I think.
Yes. So what was your first impression, if you recall it, when you finally, you guys ended up listening to The Mysteries?
I got my copy of The Mysteries from Valti's CD store, the shop that I mentioned before. I had already been into black metal for some time when I got my hands on the album. I remember it was harder to find all this music at the time. This would have been around 2006, maybe. I remember I had only heard Death Crush at the time, so I was expecting something more in line with that type of, you know, old school Creator Sodom type of almost thrashy black metal. And first, I didn't like the vocals at all. It was just so bizarre. I had never heard anything like this. And I still today, I don't think I've heard anything like it. It's a really unique album, and just they really amped up the production value of everything. You can hear everything on that album is crystal clear and feels like something out of a, I don't know, fantasy book or something. It feels really unearthly.
Yeah. I think I have pretty similar experience. Like, first of all, it's just a really good album. Like, the guys in the scene here in Iceland, they, like, I remember Thorir from Svartidauði, he made a list of 100 best black metal albums of all time, and it was all just The Mysteries, the whole list. So, yeah, there was no question about how majestic this album is. And like I said, I knew the history behind the album before I even heard it. So, yeah, it was really fascinating to put all the pieces together when I finally heard the music. And it's a really strange combination to have these weird Hungarian vocals on top of these bitter Norwegian teenagers. And Hellhammer's drumming is, I don't want to say over the top, but it's just like super extreme and creative, and still we have the simplicity in the riffs, like Freezing Moon. It's a very classic, like, it's a cliche that bands are doing it during line checks at shows or something like that, and it's just kind of funny to hear this cliche, but just simple stuff like this is so potent, and it's so purely evil and primitive in that sense, like not trying to complicate things. It's honest.
Yeah, it really cuts straight to the point from the first second. Like Dao said, it's not, none of this stuff is particularly hard to play, but the melodies themselves are so effective because of it. You can internalize them immediately as you hear them.
Yeah, you can feel how crazy they are, or at least how crazy they intend to be.
Yeah.
And it is a very strange combination, like the four guys on this album. Very, very, very epic combination of our group of four.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of all the infamy surrounding the album when I heard it first. It was before I could easily look up things online, and it just added more to the mystique of it to me. I mean, how many albums can you name which has a murderer and his victim on the same recording?
Yeah, absolutely. So it wasn't an experience that wasn't up to the myth that was around the album.
Absolutely.
I wanted to discuss something with you guys, because both of you play guitar, both of you are fans of the album, and were just mentioning the guitar work on the album. That's a very particular aspect on this album, and over the years Euronymous and Snorri have been praised for the way in which they constructed the songs on this album and the way they play guitar. A very peculiar way, I understand. I'm not a guitarist myself, but I'm curious to know your thoughts on how the guitar work it's done in this album.
Well, it's magnificent. I mean, Snorri in particular, I really think he pioneered this somewhat dissonant style with all these, some these chromatic minor chords and that type of stuff. That type of riffing you would not hear on Darkthrone albums or Bursum albums or Immortal albums at the time. But it's simple but effective, and it's the kind of riffing that you can hear influence from this album in almost everything that came after it, mm-hmm. particularly in the Swedish scene with bands like with the early stuff from Ofermot or Malign and the likes.
Yeah, this, even Dark Funeral.
Yeah, Vatain. I'm not sure none of these bands would have sounded the same if it would not have been for Demisteris. And even these days, you have tons of bands copying the style of Vatain or Ofermot, and you know, at the core, it always comes back to this album, Demisteris.
Yeah, and there's like a certain
texture.
Yeah, the texture that you get from this, it's like limiting the chords to only minor chords, which usually in music theory isn't. It's really breaking the rules because it's kind of just too simple in theory, but that's really what created this character, because minor chords sound evil, and if you limit your playing style only to that, just evil chords all throughout the fretboard, it's cool if you can actually manage to make it make sense, because it speaks against the theory. I myself am sometimes I try to avoid that. I try to follow the theory. So sometimes I'm adding major chords into my chord progressions just because it makes more sense.
Because it makes the songs more dynamic.
To me, it makes the flow of the chords
more natural.
More natural, yeah. But that's just how I learned it. And getting into black metal music after learning the theory, That's a very valuable lesson in how to break the rules.
Yeah, Demisteris is like, it's crass, it's blasphemous and satanic, everything from the lyrics down to the compositions themselves. And I think that's the beauty of it, even if you ignore all the infamy surrounding it.
Yeah, they work a lot with the Diabolus in Musica.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The old Black Sabbath riff.
Yeah.
So the album also has been praised for the production work and the mixing, because it wasn't the typical, again, the typical sound that you would listen on an album, on the albums that were around at the time. And I wanted specifically to discuss this, because I know that you have studied sound engineer and produced and mixed albums. What are the aspects of this production on the Demisteris that appealed you guys the most?
Well, Thomas mentioned the clarity, even though it still has this sort of rough texture overall. Like, but that's, you can blame the playing style for that. Like, they are playing it aggressively, and especially the guitar sound. I would not say that it is a very good sound from a producer's point of view. But they had a vision. It's just like what Varg Vikernes has been notorious about, like always trying to find the worst microphone and the worst placement. I'm pretty sure that's also what they were aiming for on Demisteris, probably influenced by Varg since he was there. And the bass sounds like total crap, but it works. It's not supposed to have a lot of presence, like opposed to like the bass sound that we chose for Alkleimi. We have a very heavy bass, like it's supposed to have like a heavy blow on your speakers, but like there is no bass in the bass on Demisteris. It's just like another guitar octave lower. It's just like very gritty, dirty, distorted bass. And then when it comes to the drums, like they were clearly produced properly. And one thing that I learned in music production is that if you have a very good drum sound, then you can kind of fool the listener with the guitar and the rest of the band. Like, you can sound like crap on the guitars and bass as long as the drums are good. And it's also on Quislise Taros, I think, the toms, they sound so fucking great on that album. They're so heavy, and when after this tom section in the beginning of the first song, when the riff starts after that, like, all the bass disappears, because the only instrument on that production is in the toms. So it really, really disappears over there. That's kind of similar in The Mysteries, but it's more balanced. So it's quite dry.
Yeah, there's a ton of low ends just coming from the reverb itself. Yeah.
And they like, I heard they had the overheads over the drum kit very high up, like as high up as they could, even in Gríkhalen. That is also very unorthodox method to have the overheads this far away, but it really creates this distant, roomy vibe that again contributes to this mysterious sound, faraway sound, which is supposed to, that's how it's supposed to be. Like, it's supposed to feel like from a different world.
And regarding your own music, in either of your various projects, have you taken some of these aspects into that?
Well, not deliberately, but of course, like I mentioned before, the influence of this album really shines. It permeates the whole of black metal.
I wouldn't say in particular, but of course, yeah, like Thomas said, maybe subliminally.
I was thinking in, for example, when you guys released Alglaimi, which had a more grandiose feeling, let's say. There, I understand there's even some keyboards there featured. And I remember reading reviews that brought up, for example, Emperor as a reference. But I've always thought that it had more to do with this grandiose feeling, like that you can feel in The Mysteries.
Yeah, Mysteries is big, for sure. Big, but at the same time, like the soundscape itself is a bit dry, but it doesn't matter. Like, they are manipulating it with all this reverb and effects that make it sound big. And you know, if you don't think it's loud enough, just turn up your speakers. That's the key thing.
Okay, well, and what are your favorite songs on the album, and why? Whether it's just a matter of taste or something that you appreciate from the musical point.
For me, Funeral Fog, Freezing Moon,
First in Eternity,
Life Eternal,
Pagan Fears.
Yeah,
I would say the title track for me.
Yeah. I agree, and also Buried by Time and Dust. I think like the it has like these very vicious sections, like in the later half of the song, where it's just instrumental and they are just blowing away. It's like a jam, but a very ferocious jam. It's not like a jam that a band would do at the first rehearsal in the garage. Like, it's very focused, and it kind of puts this word atmosphere into the whole context, that it's really vicious and still at the same time dreamy.
I also think Varg's bass playing really elevates the compositions, because he's really melodic, because there's not a lot of actual bass coming from the bass, so it adds another melody into the mix, which makes the whole thing feel more dynamic. And I can't think of many songs other than, what was it, Pagan Fears? It has a walking bass line on it. Mm-hmm. I think nobody is really doing that type of stuff.
Yeah, they have this sort of fascinating feature. It's of course in other Mayhem songs, but they have this sort of feeling that whenever you feel that they cannot be faster, they manage to play faster, even faster than what they are doing. And I remember speaking with Attila once when he heard the instrumental tracks that they sent him prior to his travel to Norway, that he was like sort of fascinated with the fact that it seemed like the band was playing super fast, but the feeling was slower. It was like a very weird dynamics going on the songs.
Yeah, this it's really heavy.
Okay, so a couple of years the band did a tour playing the entire album. So I wanted to know if you were able to watch any of the shows, and if so, what was your thoughts?
We saw it twice, I think.
We saw it twice, both times at Beyond the Gates in Bergen. And yeah, last time we saw it was 2022, where they played it in Griekhallen. Mm-hmm. And that was really, really fascinating to see.
Yeah,
the sound was fucking great in there.
Yeah, they had designed like an entire set piece on the stage, which felt like something out of Nosferatu or one of these old, you know, original horror movies. It was really impressive. And I mean, it had all the things you would expect. Attila walking around with a human skull and his weird chantings, massive inverted cross hanging from the roof.
Starting funeral folk with the correct drum fill. Yeah.
Okay, and have you ever been in touch with the band and ever, I don't know, maybe the chances of opening up for them or something like that?
We were invited to do a tour with them a very long time ago, but we had it was clashing with some other festivals that we had booked, so we had to reject it. But we met Attila a few times. I got to know him a little bit at this year's Inferno in Norway, and then again he was there with
what was it, the Void, the Voices.
Yeah, he was there at the Prague Deathmass last year, and then of course in Chile. Yeah, he's nice, he's weird, but he's supposed to be weird. And Hungarians are weird. Like, I know a few, and they are all weird. In a good way.
Okay. I wanted to know, what's your current relationship with the album? I mean, if you played often, if your perspective towards it has changed through the years?
Not really. Like, when you hit... when you reach the mark where you know everything, and so everything is predictable, then it's a matter of enjoying it for yourself. And I think it's just like a good movie, like say Silence of the Lambs or something. Like, that would be like an example of a movie that I can enjoy again and again. But I'm trying to not watch it too many times because I don't want to get bored with it. So yeah, for me personally, I try to save it and rather listen to it on special occasions. Like you wouldn't want to have a holiday celebration every day. Like, it's something special to preserve.
Yeah, I always play it seasonally, usually like autumn, late autumn, early winter when it starts snowing. And I always have the CD in my car. It's nice when you're driving out in the wilderness, and especially nice if you got headphones on and there's a blizzard outside. But yeah, it's one of these classic albums. I mean, how often do you listen to Paranoid, for example?
Yeah, so the final question, what does The Miseries mean to you in terms of, in artistic terms, and do you think it is, you know, it's almost a cliche at this point, but nonetheless, I think it's true, but do you think this is the best album ever in this type of music?
I mean, there is no single artwork in any genre that you could call the best of anything. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of irrelevant, but it is, you could make an argument to say that it was the most important one. Mm-hmm. I think if you're playing in a black metal band and you've never listened to this album like wholeheartedly, then there is something missing from your education, in a sense.
Yeah. If we had to make a list of the top 10 or 20 best black metal albums ever, it would probably end at the top over there.
Yeah.
It's like if we made it,
neutrally.
Yeah. Like, that would be like a neutral, but if we would like start making a list of our favorite albums, like personally that influenced us, it would still make the list, but maybe there are some other albums that could even go higher, but that's not many albums, like probably just like, I don't know, Salvation, Funeral Mist, or yeah, it would definitely make the top five. But the first part of the question, like how it affects how we see it artistically, I think we already answered that.
I mean, yeah, it is one of the cornerstones of black metal, and it needs to be regarded as such.
It's like the rain in blood of black metal or something like
yeah.
that.
Like.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.